Ready for a special offer on a print subscription to Premier Guitar? Visit shop.premierguitar.com now and use this coupon, PODCAST15, that's PODCAST15, to get 15% off a one-year subscription to our in-depth coverage of your favorite artists and the coolest new gear. Offer valid in U.S. only, no Wi-Fi required.
Chris Keys, we're in Atlanta, Georgia with the Dans, I guess. The gentlemen, Dan Auerbach, obviously, and Dan Johnson, who you've known for the third time for another Rick Rundown with us for the Black Keys. Guys, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about guitars. I know there's a lot of stories in here, so I'm going to get out of the way and let you guys just talk guitars. Okay. What's the first one here?
Well, we should start with this one, because this is sort of the reason we're here. This is
wow.
A guitar that was made by a guitar player named Glenn Schwartz, and he was the original guitar player in the James Gang. He's from Cleveland, Ohio. And when I was 16, I used to go see him play this guitar. He played through two quad reverbs in a tiny bar.
Which is a big reason why we have the quads.
It's the only reason I have the quads is because of Glenn, yeah. And the reason I bought my Harmony, the Heath kit, was because I wanted this body shape.
Because
I used to see Glenn's every week. And anyway, he was Joe Walsh's guitar hero, and we just played in Cleveland, and his family brought his guitar and let me play it. And then after the show, they said, why don't you take it for the rest of the tour? And so it's very surreal.
Yeah.
But this, I used to watch him play this, and it was the biggest inspiration for the Black Keys and for when I was starting.
Is there anything you've had to do to it to kind of make it, not obviously you're going to change anything, but maybe to make it a little better or anything?
We just clean it up a little bit, and that's it.
It has so much of Glenn's mojo
on
it.
You kind of don't want to mess with it.
You can see that it started life as a regular guitar, but he has hundreds of hours into customizing it. Because look, he's rounded this over. He made these. It's look at the holes.
Yeah, the F-hole is amazing.
He cut those. This is a solid hunk of brass. Front to back.
Wow.
Also, you want to explain these?
Well, he was very religious, and apparently he told me that in the Bible it says if you play for the Lord, you play a 10-stringed instrument. So he added the strings.
Wow.
All the music he played was religious, by the way.
Okay.
It sounded like Cream,
but it was religious.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was
it's a trip.
He was in a band. You guys should look up All Saved Freak Band on YouTube. All Saved Freak Band,
yeah.
That's Glenn on guitar.
And with the Glenn's guitar, is there any songs you're bringing that out specifically for, or is it kind of just how you feel it?
I could kind of play the whole set, really.
Yeah.
Just kind of feeling it, like, what do you want to play on this song tonight?
What do you like about that pickup? Because that just not only that it looks like a mini humbucker, but it kind of angled in a weird position.
Well, it's just a position that he chose.
Yeah.
Because I mean, his playing was like shreds too. I mean, he was really, really good.
And I saw him. The first time I saw him, I think I was probably 16.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I ever saw him change that guitar since then.
So that's a lot of Glenn.
Mm-hmm.
What's the next one we're gonna look at here?
The next one is this.
I fucking love this guitar.
Wow.
So this is a PV Razor, and this guy named T Model Ford used to play a PV Razor, just like this.
Wow.
And we decided to put one together. Because I called my friend Bruce, who runs Fat Possum Records, and I said, whatever happened to that guitar that T Model played? I didn't even know what it was. And he said, oh, it's a PV Razor. He said his son stole it and stripped it and sold it. But anyway, so I tracked one down and we put it together, and my friend Mickey, put these stickers on.
Just like T-Model.
Like T-Model.
Complete homage.
And we've got the tail dragger. It's just like him.
So. I love that.
Anyway.
And what was the knob there? I heard you're like a...
Oh.
Is it like a...
Six position.
Okay.
It's the pickup selector switch. Volume, tone, zone.
All the hardware on the guitar is nothing like T-Model's was. These are like, the Armand Gold foils off of a Harmony.
Oh, all right.
And this is a K. And I made this bridge to look... and this arm too, just to kind of make it into his own thing.
Is this like a hat rack, like the last one, that custom
no,
you had?
No, that's just actually rack? Just a yeah. I remember that on the green guitar.
Yeah.
No, that's just a plate of brass.
Huh.
Yeah, apparently you can make a brass Bigsby tremolo arm.
This sort of started out as like this weird, fun idea, and then it really plays good, and it's fun to play. And the trem is really buttery and smooth, super rubbery.
Yeah, and in a way that it kind of reminds me, in a shape-wise, of the Guild Thunderbird you played a lot, sort the T-Bird.
Yeah.
That offset in a way.
This is, I've had this guitar for a long time.
Yeah, this is one from the old school.
Played this for years. This is a Ibanez SG.
Yeah, like a lawsuit, Les Paul custom.
Yeah, like
a 61 Les Paul custom sort of copy, I guess. But look, it's like actual set neck. And just like a Gibson, too, they've painted over the binding with the cream color.
Oh.
I always thought that was a weird thing about the actual Gibsons, but they kept it pretty real.
They've copied it right down to those details.
Mm-hmm. And we haven't done much to it. We
just
upgraded
it working.
The tuners.
Yeah.
Because the tuners went bad, unfortunately. The original Ibanez tuners had pulled a little star inlay. I hated to get rid of them, but we had to.
They weren't
working.
Yeah.
And does this get brought out at any specific point or any songs or anything?
We've been mixing it up a bunch. But we keep changing it around.
Keep it fresh.
A couple of the newer songs it has been on a few times. But the thing is, you have so many tones available up there.
Yeah.
And the guitars are not like wildly different from each other. I mean, the T-model guitar is a little different than a lot of the other ones, but because it's single coils. But you can almost play
anything, really.
Yeah. He could. I mean, he's the one that, I hear the difference clearly because I listen pretty closely with the ear monitors. But yeah.
Do you guys have issues tuning-wise or stability-wise with the arm? Because sometimes those old tailpieces can get finicky.
It's more about fine-tuning everything else around that to make it work.
Okay.
It's just like a Bigsby.
Yeah.
You know, like, these kinds of tremolos can stay in tune just right. He plays in a way that doesn't challenge them, though.
Yeah.
Like, if you're trying to boo, no.
Yeah.
Never.
Subtle.
But if you gently, then yes.
Okay.
You can do it.
So yeah, no dive bombs.
Right. Make sure these are cut properly, and these are cut and lubed properly, and the strings are... There's a tuning technique to it, also. That's the biggest thing.
So that's a secret.
It kind of is. I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't tell somebody how it goes, but it might be a little bit boring and tedious for this conversation.
Dan's full of secrets.
No wonder he keeps employed.
If you told me everything, yeah.
It's how you tune it.
This one, straight out of the Western.
This thing, because I saw these, furniture nails.
Yeah.
I just thought it was that... so absurd, and I like these lawsuit guitars. So anyway, we bought it. We put these Lollers in here.
Okay.
Put that on there too. That's off your old Duojet.
Yeah.
I think that actually came off of Neil Young's guitar.
Wow.
Because that came from Larry Cragg. Nick called up Larry Cragg one day when you needed a Bigsby for that Gretsch,
really?
And he got him to send that one out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because you know those two dudes have so many Bigsby's just laying around.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was one of our old technicians used to work for Neil and knew Larry anyway.
All right.
So he was just looking for an excuse to call him.
Catch up.
He's cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it didn't have this or these. And then we changed the knobs too. And the tuners, of course. You know, and I refretted it, whatever it needs to make it work. But... it is what it is, though. You want to...
Yeah, what do you like about it now that you've actually owned it beyond the what caught your eye?
I mean, having the Filtertrons is really interesting.
Yeah.
I really like the sound of Filtertrons. I've been using a Gretsch in the studio a bunch, so I wanted to have some on tour. I bought this guitar just because of this. It was so ridiculous. I was like, it was in my living room for like a week. Before I realized, I was like, this headstock looks so familiar to me. And I got out one of my Junior Kimbrough records, Sad Days and Lonely Nights. And this is the...
Wow.
This is the lawsuit model that he plays.
It's such a trip, because he's such a... You're a big fan of him.
I
so
know.
And
I, it was
coincidentally run into that.
It's an unbranded Univox.
I had no idea, really, when I bought it, that it was the same style guitar.
You must have known, like, back here.
Yeah.
And then it
I didn't even see it to come forward. I saw this.
Tell them about Billy.
Billy Sanford, guitar player from Nashville. He played like the guitar riff in Pretty Woman.
Oh yeah.
Just like all kinds of crazy stuff. He came up with the name for this one.
Let's hear it.
Nails in my coffin.
You know what you gotta call that.
Yeah. So I came up with a name for you, boy. Nails in my coffin.
So. Hence the headstock.
Yeah.
That's nails.
So yeah, we just call it nails.
It's perfect.
It is what it is. So Gretsch guy contacted me recently saying
he saw us playing these ridiculous guitars, right?
Damn interesting.
He's like, I got one for you.
So yeah. He sent us a Bo Diddley guitar.
It's perfect.
It was all red, like that. And just to think that, like, what year did he, was this his model? 50-something? 60-something?
I don't know. I couldn't say. I mean, he had so many different ones.
It's so crazy to think that this is the design he decided.
Yeah. Like, that's the one that they said, hey, we'll build you a guitar, whatever you want.
Yeah.
He said rectangle.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, Dan stripped it. And we were in L.A., and it was the first show.
Yeah, the first show back.
So, you tell the story, yeah, because
we went in there. We had been doing rehearsals, and rehearsals for an arena show.
Yeah.
But the first show was in the Wiltern.
Which is a theater.
Which is a little place.
Yeah.
Right, so we had an extra day to get in there. And I had a lot of loose ends to work out because it was still the beginning of the tour. So I was working late one night, and Dan was saying, I kind of want it to look more like, you know, something I would be interested in. And so he came up with the idea of making it brown. And I was like, well, yeah, in the 70s, lots of people stripped their guitars and put it like a dime store or a hardware store finish on it with some shellac or whatever. Anyway, I sanded the red off of the top down to the wood. And I was working on it late at the Wiltern. The night guy showed up, and it was just me and him and our lighting guy who was programming late. And he saw me sanding on it, and I was just finishing it, and I was kind of all dusty and sweaty. And he's like, so now what are you doing? And I said, well, I want to go to a hardware store and get some stain and some varnish and just, you know, do a shitty finish on it.
Yeah.
I want it to look, actually, it looks pretty good, though.
I was going to say, it looks like a piece of furniture now.
But it was just a brush, you know, and one coat of each. So he said, we're in L.A., so I don't know where a hardware store, or if I'm going to have time to get there tomorrow. So I was a little worried about it. And he said, oh, man, you should come to the basement with me right now. And we did. So I had a beer because we were there at 10 o'clock, you know, and I was like, okay, follow him to the basement. And there was a giant shelf of just maintenance stuff. And they had exactly the right brown and exactly the right clear varnish. And I brought it up, and in half an hour, it was done.
How satisfying to have that done and you're able to leave, enjoy that beer.
And the next day he came in and it was already done. He didn't know. He was just like, whoa!
Yeah.
How did it come together so quickly?
And this plays really, really good too, surprisingly good.
How does it feel to have on your body? Because it is such a weird shape.
It's very balanced.
Yeah.
Comfortable. Yeah, it's pretty comfortable. As long as you don't try to play above, like, you know.
Yeah, playing up G. Doesn't really
work. Cool.
Yeah.
And do we have a name for that one yet?
Bo D?
No.
Just Bo, maybe?
We call him Bo.
Bo D? Yeah.
Bo D.
Now we've been slowly working up our way to this one.
So which one? This one?
Whatever you guys want to dive into.
I guess let's just show them that one real quick. Okay. It's still working.
That was before we were talking.
Right, yeah, we didn't start the camera yet.
This was based on a Japanese guitar called a... What's that guitar called?
It was the Kawai Flying Wedge. But
Flying Wedge.
That was a copy of the Italian Echo Rokes.
Ah.
Echo Rokes.
The Rokes. Were an Italian band. They were the Italian Beatles, but they were actually just British guys who moved to Italy.
Good career move.
But Echo made them guitars. So, you know, back in the 60s, like 65, you see all those pictures of bands and they all have the same guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, doing the thing.
Yeah, like the Ventures, yeah.
Right, exactly. They were doing that and it's never caught on. But a couple of years later, in about 68 or 69, Kawai, which is Japanese, cheap guitar, they made the same thing, only it was a little different, but they were the only ones to make that shape. So Dan bought one of those on eBay, but he had it shipped to my place, so he never saw it, and it came to my place, and I was just like, oh man, this thing is really cheap.
Now, is this the plywood body?
Is that the norm? Like you purchase and then they go to Dan because you know that
sometimes TLC.
Sometimes.
Okay.
It had potential, but it wasn't ready to play. I mean, if it was something that was really cool and it was ready to play, it would go to him first. Sure.
So it goes to you. You get it, and it's cheap. So yeah, then what happens?
I sent pictures of him. I'm like, I don't think this is gonna work. And he wanted to do the Lonnie Mack V style approach to mounting the Bigsby.
Yeah.
And its tremolo was right here, and there was a giant hole. So that, you know, would have been real ugly. Plus the body was plywood. So anyway, to make a long story short, I made a whole nother guitar that already sort of looks like this.
Because that seemed easier.
The arcs for a while.
Yeah.
And through playing that and then modifying it and playing it more, we just, the conversation was like, I like this guitar, but it needs a couple more refinements. So, you know, it's a tiniest bit bigger and a little bit longer, and then the Bigsby guitar idea came in to play. Like, let's make it sort of Bigsby-ish.
Chambered,
yeah, hollow body, all bird's eye maple, and it's got a honky tone to it. I mean, those the Bigsby pickups, you know, no, you can't buy those. So,
yeah.
And they probably wouldn't have worked for, they're probably cool sounding, but they probably wouldn't have worked for what we're doing.
Yeah.
So we use these mini humbucker Firebird style. And I basically, I just wired that up like a little bit ago, so we're going to try it for the first time today, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you think you'll plug her in playing the show tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
It's wired, yeah.
Cool.
Absolutely.
That's exciting.
Beautiful work, man.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's been a real, real fun project because, we're texting back and forth with each other, sending pictures of other guitars. I want it to be like this, kind of. Like, well, what do you think of this design? Super fun evolution, and it's just like wrapping up like today.
Yeah,
it's weird. Fun to look over all the Paul Bigsby details too.
Yeah, like people might not be familiar that he actually built instruments like from Travis back in the day, and we were talking earlier about motorcycle parts even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's crazy that you really got that going on and with the headstock, everything.
Yeah, it's all Dan.
I can't wait to hear that thing. Maybe hopefully tonight.
Yeah.
But last but not least.
Last but not least.
This fella.
This little guy.
This is new.
Ish. This is a one owner, 59.
Wow.
Was purchased in Topeka, Kansas, and he played it his whole life, and I bought it from his sister.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a trip.
It's like, it's the first 59 I ever played. I've never even really seen a 59 before.
Yeah, in person.
And I just walked into the shop, and it had just got there. So I wasn't thinking about it or anything.
Now that you've had time with it, do you think, you know, a lot of those instruments from 59, 60 get some hype?
It's incredible.
Big price tags. Do you think,
it's incredible. It does a special thing, yeah. It's got a special sound. I used it in the studio a bunch already this past month. It's really cool.
Yeah.
That's the kind of, like, guitar that he would have probably normally just been like, I don't know. Because it's already a famous guitar, sort of, and there's not like something unusual to discover with it. What to discover with it is like what everybody sees about it in the first place.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. Like those pickups are
pretty magical. That's the magic.
Yeah.
Anyway, this has been a lot of fun to play on the tour, and you know, to jump between this and a PV Razor, kind of like.
Nothing's off the table.
I love that. All right, Dan.
Not anymore.
Let's go upstairs and talk amps and stuff up there.
Okay.
All right. We're up on stage, Dan. Dan Johnson, talk to us about the evolvement that has happened here on stage, because I don't see a Marshall anymore and some new friends. So
yeah. No Marshall heads.
Explain what's going on.
So as we started to do the rehearsals and... Well, before we started rehearsals, we set up some rigs and started like just testing out where we were using this,
because
we always did.
Yep.
Yeah, and we used this with another Marshall head. You've probably seen that in the old interview, but
yep.
We started with that. But those both have solid state rectifiers, and that's kind of the short story. And it gives it a faster, punchier, bolder, louder, in your face kind of sound.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of too much. They were too loud. That's part of the 45 degrees angle thing, you know, that we used to do. It was like just dime them and turn them away.
Yeah.
And that's cool. They did sound good, but Dan's tastes and you know, the nuance of the tones that he's going after, just got sort of refined. He's been using other amps in the studio over the last few years, making a lot of records and stuff. Not these amps, you know. So we just started experimenting, first of all, with the idea of getting some amps that have tube rectifiers, which this Bandmaster does have. And so does the old Challenger.
Yeah, which were
these
the
were
last
in the old
ones.
Rig. Yeah, I got a second one too, as a, you know, like a spare sort of, and it rounds out the head.
Yeah, I was gonna say, gives it like a complete look.
It's crazy looking rig. So we were in his studio messing around, and we had this and this and this, and we decided to go across the street to Carter's and down a few blocks, and walked in the back, right to the very back corner, and there were these two just sitting there. And at reasonable prices, both of them had been worked on recently, and so we were like, let's try them. So within a few minutes, really, we walked out of there with, I walked in here in two amps. Like, we went back over to the studio, set this up with one of each, and did a bunch of testing with pedals and stuff, and loved it, because it's a much softer, it's a squishier, browner sounding.
I was gonna say,
what does sounding.
That tube rectifier do, okay.
Yeah, it squishes, and okay. It's softer, and it's slower responding. All that is very favorable to how he plays. He doesn't play real, you know, aggressive pick attack. He's got kind of a delicate approach to it, and it just works. We loved it so much. So we messed with it for hours, and he said, well, I got this dinner engagement. So he went to meet with a friend and came back a few hours later. And during that time, I went to storage and got this and this. And when he came back, it was doubled. And he went there to dinner thinking, wow, that really sounds great. I'm all excited about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, well, you know, we're going out on another arena tour. You know, we need a rig.
You need a Stonehenge.
You got all this stuff.
Yeah.
What? You already own it.
Let's rock.
Let's do it. Right. What's this tour called?
That's
right. So, yeah, once we started doing that, I'm like, I know it is ridiculous. I had to get a whole new sled made.
Yeah,
this one's,
you got the pull cables.
Yeah, the old one was 9 or 8 foot, and this one's 9'3", and I have to have these guys, like, moving around.
Yep.
Because you can't really, you know, grab these amps. Anyway, so the other part of that experiment process was to incorporate all these devices that he loves, that he's been curating.
Yeah.
Basically, they're... So,
this one was the last time.
EP4.
Yep.
That's not the same. We were using full tones before. He's got a few, and they're really good.
Yeah.
It's just, this has a very specific sound to it. So, I got that, and this Premier Reverb, too. It's just a reverb tank. It just has a completely different sound than what's in any of these.
Uh-huh.
These are bright and splashy, and that's dark and...
Are they combined, or is these dialed out and that's the main one?
This amp has a tiny bit of reverb on it.
Okay.
But it's only like the tiniest bit.
Yeah.
And this just comes on for effect. And
okay.
It comes in and out during the show with switching, MIDI switching. This is coupled with that so that he can take it into outer space.
Yeah. Perfect.
Basically, that was the point. Like, have this cranked, because it'll get super deep.
Oh, I bet.
Although we don't have it set like that, it will. And if you couple that with this, punching into the reverb, you know, with this repeats, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
For a, like, spacey guitar solo, Neil Young style sound.
Oh, yeah.
And then we have this guy, which is...
More than meets the eye.
Yeah, it's the story with it is so cool. Everything has a story, by the way. I'm trying to keep them short so they don't go too deep. But so this is basically an amp. It's one 12X7, one 6V6, and its speaker output is the input to these other amps. It's
what?
A preamp.
Wow.
It's a whole amp as a preamp. And the concept, Garnett was a Canadian company, and Randy Bachman was using a Champ. Apparently, I read this little internet story thing about he was using a Champ and plugging it into like a Marshall half stack or 100 watt or something like that as a preamp, the speaker output into the input of the other. And it would sound amazing for a few minutes, and then it would blow up.
I was gonna say, that sounds volatile.
There's no load on this guy.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened to the big amp. I mean, maybe it survived or not. It might have a pretty big fire.
Yeah.
I don't know.
sounds like a hazard.
Yeah, he coupled up with this Garnett guy, I can't remember his last name offhand. Doesn't matter. You can find that on the internet if you needed to.
Yeah.
But this guy just basically made it work. And it's a fuzzy overdrive. It can get pretty squishy and fuzzy sounding, but it's kind of more of like just an overdrive distortion. It has a very singing tone to it for leads. And it's a little bit crunchy, too. It's an unusual sound for Dan, you know, for the kind of tones that he usually goes for. But on his recordings, you know, the band's recordings, there are some of those type of tones that we've never really reproduced in that sort of way. We've always just used, you know, variations of fuzz pedals.
Yeah.
So the amps are still pretty much set the way they were, which is, you know, kind of dirty if you're pounding on it.
Yeah.
And kind of clean if you're tickling it.
So,
also about amps and stuff, we got this guy is 40 watts, tube rectifier, 4 6V6s in the power section.
And this is the Commander, right?
This is the Challenger.
Challenger.
This is a 1950, and this is a 1949. But the thing is, they have the tube rectifier, that's the cool thing, but the 4 6V6s, that's unusual.
Yeah,
amps don't really do that anymore. Not for a long time since then. And also the preamp tubes are steel canisters too, so it's like old school.
Yeah.
But it is brown as the Tolex sounding. I mean, it's just squishy, it's beautiful sounding amp just plugged straight into it. So that one powers that.
Okay.
810 and this 810, both.
Wow.
And this gets a signal but just sends a dry pre a lot of other effects signal to front of house so
front
that
house.
He can blend
do his thing
how affected he wants to hear things because it's such a good sounding crystal tone that comes like out of it. It's got a nice top and it's squishy even just direct.
So also
same sort of scenario with these Bandmasters. These are combos, we already have them, you know, because of we use this other one for the arcs. Actually Homer played bass through this one, and this was part of Dan's old Black Keys rig. But since we got these heads, I basically have a main and a spare. But they look so amazing like that, might as well just have the spare. So this Bandmaster head powers these two, which we already had.
Okay.
And this is a spare. So we got two 412s, basically, with an open back.
Mm-hmm.
And we have 1610s with closed back. But all relatively low wattage. This is 40 watts. This is roughly 40 watts. And the old amps were, you know, a 50 watt Marshall, which is really loud.
Yeah.
And this is 100 watts. So, you know, I got even two more spares on stage that could work. This has a master volume. The point we were looking for at first was that this doesn't have a master volume and it has a tube rectifier. Non-master volume amps set to their sweet spot always sound better than amps that have.
Do you think it's just less circuitry, so it's more pure?
Yeah.
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 Quicker to the result.
Yeah. But you know, that's not an option for a lot of people because it gets pretty damn loud.
Yeah.
Even at 40 watts. So I mean, the overall rig looks huge, but it's not that loud.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not loud at all considering how loud it was before.
Mm-hmm.
And, so, yeah.
And before, didn't you guys have some type of configuration? In my head, I felt like there was 8s, 10s, and 15s. Did you have a 15 at any point?
Yeah. Well, this amp has a 15 in it.
Okay, but that's not actually getting...
Right, it's disconnected.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And also we had that Commando
that
has
8
8s.
Okay, that's right. And they opened up the accordion.
Yeah.
Is that still in the service?
Yeah.
Just not in this
current
rotation.
Just didn't make the cut for this guy.
And if I didn't ask about this, I'd get in trouble.
Oh, that's... Just bypass
for
this.
I didn't know if that was like an old Dan Electro pedal of some sort.
No, that's the one that came with it.
Cool.
It's just sometimes I just want to, I'm messing with stuff and I want to bypass. So I just left it there.
Hey, PG fans. If you're enjoying this rig rundown, please consider giving us a positive rating in your podcast platform of choice. And while you're at it, subscribe to our feed to make sure you never miss an episode.
And in sanctity of time, because we talk so much about guitars and obviously covered these new things, the pedals are kind of the same. We had the metal controller out front that we had in the last rig rundown, and the rack is kind of pretty much the same, you're saying.
Yeah, pretty much the control is all still RJM.
Yeah.
And the tones, you know, we're still playing a lot of the same songs.
Fuzzes.
you know, a lot of the same stuff that were on the last one.
Right.
So, it's,
so we just have to keep that all the, sort of the same.
Yeah.
I mean, he likes to experiment, and we got like lots of other stuff to play with, but a lot of it's still the same. So.
Totally understandable. Well, Dan, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Talk to the rest of the guys. All right, now we're on to Steve, Delicate Steve, properly. Steve, how you doing?
Doing pretty well.
Thanks for doing this. If you're not aware, Delicate Steve has his own awesome, stellar solo career. And check out the interview we did a couple months ago on the issue. But let's talk gear, man. And what is holding in your hands? It's beauty.
This is a 66 Melody Maker SG that my buddy Ophir Ganon sold to me. He's like the only kind of guitar guy that I'm not really particular with gear. And he collects really sweet guitars and finds them for really cheap and will play them for a while and sell them. So he's had more guitars than anybody I've known, and
it's
they're
like a
all
guitar library almost.
Amazing.
And
so he had this one, and I wanted to buy it like right when I saw it because it just looks really cool.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't sell it to me for a while, but he finally did. Thanks, Ophir.
What was his hesitation? Just because he was bonding with it so much?
I think because I wanted it. He didn't want to sell it. But then I told him I didn't want it anymore, and then he sold it to me. No, I'm kidding. But it's got the T-tops pickups in there, like late 60s. It sounds really great and looks awesome, and it's fun guitar to play.
Was this something you were kind of always, like, you had a vision of this guitar? Was it something you weren't really aware of in terms of having an affection for it until you had it in your hands and we were bonding with it? Or is it something you've always kind of lost it after?
No, I just saw it. I'm not a big gear collector person or, like, so I just kind of saw it at his house and was like, that looks awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, the color was what
it's beautiful.
I really liked about it. It's like the faded Pelham blue.
And what about the pickguard? This is looks like it's been customized in some sort of way. Is that something you did or a previous owner?
Ophir did this. He just painted over what was on there. I don't know what the original color was, and it's sort of faded over the year or so that I've had it.
Yeah. And what strings are you running in this bad boy?
These are just 10s on here. I normally like to play 9s, but for the Black Keys stuff, I've just been doing 10s because I feel like it makes more sense in a way that I couldn't really articulate. But
yeah,
so back to 10s here.
What do you like about 9s when you're playing them on other guitars or other projects?
I just got used to playing them with Delicate Steve because they're a little bit harder to control. And I don't know, I guess in a way, I like the subtlety of strings kind of moving around a little bit and not being so rigid. And my style for that is kind of like vocal sounding, so maybe it's a little more helpful. I just did it because I know like Jimmy Page had 9. Everyone had 9s that I liked, so that's why I put them on there.
Yeah.
And I just got used to that.
Cool. Let's talk about another equally awesome green guitar. All right, Steve, what's this bad boy? This is beautiful.
This is a Gibson Custom Shop. I think it's like a 59 like replica thing. Got it for this Keys tour.
Oh, really?
Gibson kind of hooked this one up, so thank you.
Gibson. Did you have any say in the green? Because it's a pretty unique color for the V.
No, and I wanted to paint it when we first got it.
Yeah.
But I've kind of gotten used to it, and I like it now. And it's definitely a unique olive green thing going on. But yeah, it's really fun to play. I like playing Flying V's.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because I know the Delicate Steve, last thing you recorded had some of the Joe Bonamassa kind of Carina V. What do you like about Flying V's, whether it's the holding of it or playing it or the sound?
I don't know who Joe Bonamassa really is, but I saw some Instagram video of him, and I didn't, and he was just a guy in like a suit,
yeah,
like kind of looked like a Matrix.
Yeah, and sunglasses.
Yeah, and had that guitar, and I was like, that looked kind of cool to me at the time.
Yeah.
So, without doing too much research, I just bought one of those, like his artist model, mostly because of how it looks.
Yeah.
And I like buying guitars for how they look sometimes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the one I've been playing in Delicate Steeps. I just feel like it looks classic, but also futuristic. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to play V in this band, and it just kind of ended up working out. And they had one of these guys when we went down to the headquarters in Nashville, and so here it is.
What do you know what pickups are in there?
I don't. It's like, I think it's like 59, like,
okay.
You know.
Like a reissue, so probably something, maybe a PFA style pickup.
Yeah, I don't actually know, to be honest with you. But yeah, it sounds cool. It definitely has a different sound than the SG, so kind of divvying up the set. The ones that need to look Flying V, I play this one, and sometimes they sound good.
Yeah.
And then the SG ones, and yeah.
I was gonna ask you and the Gabber Brothers, is with like the gear that you guys bring to this job, this band, like how much is it just like they're just like Patrick and Danner's like play whatever you want, or are they like specific in terms of like, all right, this song when you play at this part you need a single coil or
no? Yeah, it's like, pretty chill. Dan wanted us, I know he wanted us to mess around with super reverbs.
Okay.
So that's kind of what I started rocking with, and I've been messing around with some other stuff. But yeah, they're, you know, they're cool, and it's kind of just
thing.
Show up and play, and you know, as long as they don't bring in, I don't know, maybe I'll find out what's off limits and get
yeah,
back to you.
Yeah, because sometimes you don't know until it's too late.
Yeah.
Cool, let's move on to the next guitar.
Cool.
All right, another shape, definitely fresh. How's this one make its way into the set? Is this a backup, or is it kind of specific to any songs?
This is on a couple songs. Eagle Birds, the new Black Keys record, because Firebird, Eagle Bird, you know, I'm going off of
the connection.
Less sonic and more
visuals.
Visuals and colors and shapes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got this. This is also just a loner Gibson that I got like a couple years ago. I was playing in another band, Amen Dunes, and we were gonna like fly to Europe, and I had this other guitar that I was a little afraid of taking.
Mm-hmm.
And so Gibson hooked this one up, and I think it's just like a 2015 Firebird. It's got these tuners, and forget what these are called, but it's the first guitar I've had with these. It's actually really easy to restring and stays in tune nice, and looks cool. Different shapes, you know, it's all about.
Now, I know shapes. Sometimes you play slide. Is any of these guitars specific to the slide parts you play, or is it just, again, what you're feeling?
It's mostly the SG,
yeah.
The Melody Maker SG. I think that one, definitely sounds the best.
Yeah.
It's got a really sweet sound, so. And I'm most comfortable with that guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the set is like with that guitar, I'd say.
Right on. And I think there's one more shape and size.
One more shape, one more size.
All right, let's see this bad boy.
This is a Silvertone 1423. I think it's like 1960. I got this one just for the tour.
Certainly the most Black Keys of your guitar collection.
Yeah, just to get, I forget what exactly these pickups are, but, you know, it's like the gold foil.
Yeah, the old vintage gold foils.
Yeah, and I played guitars like this before, just kind of went out on a whim. Looks cool.
Yeah, it's got the sparkle.
Yeah. I play this on like, there's sort of like a part of the set where there's some older Keys songs,
mm-hmm.
and also on like Tighten Up and Thick Freakness and 10 Cent Pistol.
Oh, all right.
So I just feel like that this guitar makes sense for those tunes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely got the Black Keys vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fun one.
Cool, man. Well, let's hop up on your perch here and kind of go through the rest of your rig.
Cool.
All right, Steve, we're up on your little perch here, the crow's nest of the Black Keys stage.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds. It looks like you have a pair of Fenders combos behind you, but only the Supers plugged in. Can you explain here?
Yeah, we kind of started with Andy and I both with Super Reverbs, and I like them because they're loud and clean,
yeah.
And it's been fun to kind of play so close to Patrick and have most of my amp volume, pretty much all my amp volume, coming out of my amp.
Yeah.
So there's not like, I'm not getting monitors and stuff, and so I can just hear the drums.
Yeah, you're real close.
Hear my amp here and get some of Dan's vocal and guitar in this wedge. So directionally, like, it feels really cool.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's probably good for Jason out front to have an amp with a lot of dynamics. I'm normally used to playing stuff that's a little more like squished sounding.
What kind of amps, like, for Delicate Steve stuff?
I play all kinds of like weird, like, I have a little orange Micro Terror Dark.
Little
now.
Guy.
Yeah, so I just play with that and then DI out of my pedal board into the front of house.
Dang.
So it's mostly, that's kind of the sound I'm used to getting, but so for that reason, I brought this amp I used to play out of up here, this head. It's someone by the name of Mark Ashley out of North Carolina just built this for me maybe like 8 years ago.
Love the name Hammertone.
Yeah, it's based off of like a Gibson Skylark,
okay.
Like the 5-watt tweed amp I used to, which I had for a long time and loved how it sounded. And I think it was mostly because in that particular amp it had a Squire, like shitty Squire speaker that was replaced in it, and it just overloaded in the right way. So I had Mark build me this, and then a 2x8 cab with the Squire, with another set of Squire speakers that I found on eBay, and it really, like, that was my favorite sound for a while. So I brought this amp out on this last tour, and that's just going into this load box here, okay. That Dan Johnson, Dan's Tech, recommended purchasing.
Yeah, he's a big fan of the Palmer stuff. I know that Dan Auerbach's been using it because of Dan.
Yeah.
Johnson.
And so right now, it's just going into the deluxe speaker, just so I don't have to rely on it in the wedge. But I'm kind of like workshopping all this still. But I like having both of these amps because they kind of like fill in the gaps a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing just breaks up like all the time. So I'm still getting a lot of like attack and dynamics out of the Super Reverb. And then this is kind of a little more squished, and they sound nice together.
Cool.
So I'm happy.
Good sandwich.
Happy with it right now. Yeah.
Cool. Well, with that being explained, let's kind of dive into your pedal board here and kind of show how you use these pedals into the context of what you bring to the band now that, you know, obviously they've been doing it for years, but playing with more than just themselves, the duo.
Yeah.
So what are you covering sonically? What's your job in the band? I should start there.
I feel like it's guitar player / like the lead keyboard melodies that are on the record, and
yeah,
kind of covering some of those things now that there's no keyboards in the band and mm-hmm. it's a 3-guitar setup. So a lot of this board is just modeled after my Delicate Steve setup,
yeah,
which includes the Mastermind PBC, which I got used to using for Delicate Steve, just because you can set up different, you know, presets and patches really easily, so I can switch from like a organ sound to like a fuzz octave thing without.
That's like a guitarist, like Excedrin. Like,
yeah.
It removes any migraines that
yeah.
could possibly be there.
Yes. Yeah, so that's the kind of like brains of this thing. And then it's a vintage Big Muff here. And then Booster, which I'm kind of keeping on most of the time. This Electro Harmonix C9 organ thing is the pedal that I'm using for the organ sounds. And then for kind of like the keyboard octave, like gold on the ceiling part, I'm kind of using this ZVEX Mastertron and Pitchfork pedal together.
Okay.
I can show you how sounds, like, but
love to hear it. It's got like that octave and the fuzz.
Yeah, and then I can just switch to a different sound very easily, obviously, and not have to turn off like four pedals. So that it's cool to cover a lot of ground with this. And then this tremolo is just the one that actually Dan uses, the Boss TR2, which I saw on when Dan Johnson did his rig rundown. I figured I should do some research.
Yeah. I'm glad that we can help.
Yeah, exactly. And then this little purple pedal is something I really like. It's Vailton. Vailton, I don't know
how
to say
it. It's got 20 different things in it, right?
Yeah.
For such a small guy.
And I use this one on the Fever, which it kind of just... It just has a little swirl to it.
Yeah, that keyboard part.
Yeah.
Because that part of the song is kind of what drives it.
Yeah, and this kind of helps... sort of just give the guitar a little bit of a weird sort of like circusy sound, which I think is cool. And then this red octave pedal, I'm not even sure what that is, but
I think it's Pictronix.
Okay.
Pictronix Octavia.
Cool. Yeah, I've been using that on some stuff that I think just came in, or Dan, you know, gave it to me. And so some of the stuff is stuff I've been playing for a while, and some stuff is just like
for the gig.
Newer like additions, yeah. And then the MXR carbon copy for just on kind of one setting. I wanted to have like between the delay and reverb something that could do a lot, and then just something that was really basic.
Yeah.
And so the MXR is just on like a slapback the whole time. And then I have the Strymon Big Sky, and I was using the timeline for my Delicate Steve stuff with the RJM and the MIDI, so I could have presets for each song. And so now I have the reverb version of that. So it's fun just to have some tight like room sounds on some songs. And then there's a couple weirder sounds like...
Yeah, let's hear them.
I got all my like songs in this thing, but on low high, it's got the...
I was wondering how that gets replicated in the live, because the album, it sounds like an elephant is about to hurl. That's
yeah,
what it
yeah, yeah.
Like. And it flies right back into the chorus again.
Yeah.
So you'd be like, you're the elephant.
I'm the elephant in the room, in the arena. And
literally.
Yeah, so it's pretty simple other than, I mean, there's like the Big Muff, the JHS for more sort of like DI, Howlin' For You guitar. And the boost are most of the overdrive sounds, just the amp. And then I just have a couple other things to fuck with.
Do you use the reverb at all on this, or is it coming?
It's all through the Big Sky.
Okay.
And so it kind of like really gets like sucked with this hammer tone amp kind of overdriving a lot. And then you kind of don't hear it a lot out of the super reverb. Mm-hmm. So Jason, who's doing sound, I feel like, and also kind of pick his blend of how affected he wants things
Let
to be by the amps. Yeah.
Cool.
And that's about it.
Steve, I'm going to ask you one last favor. Can you show us what maybe is your favorite patch that you get to play every night, or like sound?
Whew. I mean, it's cool to do... Tighten Up's got like... The tremolo, and then straight to the delay, and then...
Oh, wow, yeah. That's the C9.
So all the organ stuff is really fun, and then on 10 Cent Pistol, I'm kind of doing organ stuff while Dan solo, and that just feels fun because I can sort of dig in a little bit more as an organ player, instead of having two guitars, like, you know, goofing off.
Duel.
Yeah, so it's been really fun. We've been getting into some cool, like, that song After Laughter Comes Tears. It always reminds me of that Wendy Renee song when we were playing. But yeah, that's been like a favorite part because we get to kind of jam out on that before we like break it down.
Cool.
So yeah, just to be able to do that. And then obviously like the Gold on the Ceiling riff.
Yeah.
That's when like the curtain drops and everybody's like,
ah. Yeah, everyone and brings it up a notch.
Yeah. So it's like the most pressure, even though it's just a couple notes. And it's so just to feel that and to know that it's getting like blasted out there, and it's like, it's that feels really fun.
It's all about, man.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Steve. We're going to talk to the brothers next.
Cool. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Not last, but definitely not least, Zach Gabbard of the Black Keys currently, but also of the Buffalo Killers. If you want to do yourself a favor, go to Spotify, type in Buffalo Killers, Path Before Me. You won't regret it. This dude plays bass and sings. Also does that here. Zach, thank you so much for taking time, dude.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's get right into it. I know you're more familiar with the Gretsch.
Yeah.
But this thing has become your number one.
Yeah, this is my new number one.
How did that come about?
Gibson hooked it up for the tour. Yeah. I love the short scale.
Is that something you've just started using, the short scale? Like, okay.
Yeah. I realized I've been working too hard all this time. Yeah, I love the short scale. You know, the weight is less.
Yeah.
You know, it just, I don't know. I when I first got it, I felt like, oh, you know, maybe that'll be my secondary. And it's like, it's become my thing, man. I love it. Yeah.
Cool. And with the pickups being different like that, do you find yourself going to one or the other?
No. I have a very simple setup, and I'm just cranked, man.
Okay.
I just crank, and I'm, you know, I'll mute or let them ring, you know? Yeah.
And do you play with a pick at all, or are you kind of going both? Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of just for
always,
vibe.
Yeah. I've always been both. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. And what strings are you running on this?
Flat wounds.
And is that something that's familiar over your time, or
always,
just
required? Always, man. Oh yes. When I, you know, like for years, I was always kind of, you know, you're always searching, being younger, and you just don't know what's up.
You just want to
and
try
the
stuff.
First time that I got flat wounds, I was like, oh man, that's it. Like, it, you know, kind of, because it kind of deadens it a little bit to where it's not like so ringy.
It gives a woody
sound. And that pingy sound is kind of gone.
Yeah.
So like ever since I found that, I'm, you know, straight flat wounds all the time.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so is the SG kind of the one, and then that's just, you know, in the wings in case something happens?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Cool. Yeah. And tribute.
Yeah. Plus you got this perch up here. You got to fill it up with some stuff.
Oh yeah, man.
But moving on, you got a beautiful stack of some
SVT
here.
Man,
is that what you've been rocking, kind of?
Oh
Buffalo
yeah.
Killers or just to the Black Keys stuff?
Yeah man, Ampeg stuff's great.
Yeah.
I've used it off and on, you know, that and custom.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I always love the Fender Bassman too.
Yeah,
but yeah, this tour is all Ampeg.
And how are you mixing with obviously you plugged into this one, so this one's probably backup.
That's a backup, yep.
And this, the Palmer goes out to DI, or out
yep.
front of house?
Big boys DI tube, yeah.
Yeah. And so you bring that out to front of
nice
house?
Yeah, nice and clean, okay. Tube, yep.
And besides that, you got the 8x10 behind you?
Yep, rocking right at my back all night long.
Making sure you're
purring. Oh, it sounds beautiful and loud. It's
and
awesome.
Then on the floor here, we literally have a tuner and an old Monarch.
Yeah, man. Like I said, I totally keep it simple. You know, as fast as I can get to the amp.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never super been into pedals, just because I felt like I never could get the same girth when, you know, with my tone. But the Monarch, the Earthquaker Monarch, has always been. When Jamie set me up with that, that was like what I've always been looking. Yeah. Yeah, that's like a total, I don't even think they do the Monarch anymore.
Yeah. And what do you like about that, and how does it get applied to Black Keys stuff, like when in the set? Is it more of a feel thing, or are there specific songs you pick that on?
You know, certain songs.
Okay.
Or to get, like, you know, feedback at the end or something.
All right.
But I really like that it has a bass knob on it.
Okay.
So I can turn down the treble a little bit, and I don't lose any of the bass, you know. I don't know, with some fuzz pedals, you like lose
the end.
Yeah. So I want to have that same girth, and the Monarch is the one, man.
Cool.
And fell in love.
Before I let you go, Zach, how is it to be able to be, you've known these guys since they started, and now you get to, you've obviously worked with Dan on records, he's produced you guys.
Yeah.
And now you're on stage rocking with your homies. How fun is that?
I have the best spot in the house. Like, I'm watching Dan and Pat, and I'm watching people having a blast. Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah.
It's cool, man.
It's an experience. It's awesome. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, it's awesome to see, like, you know, just what they've built.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And you're part of it now, too.
Yeah, from the basement to here.
Yeah, right? The basement to the State Farm Arena in Atlanta.
Yeah, man, it's amazing.
Dude, thank you for time. We'll talk to your brother.
Oh, no, man, yeah.
All right, last but certainly not least, the other Gabby brother, Andy. Andy, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Also, of the Buffalo Killers. Andy, talk to me about this beautiful Les Paul.
This is my favorite guitar that I own. I got it from my friend Sven. And it's like, I think it's a 2000 Les Paul standard. And it's just like the best feeling guitar I've ever played. And I love it. I had to put a Bigsby on it. I got like the Vibramade on there, that plate.
Yep.
I just love this guitar. And I love this strap.
Oh, it's perfect.
The freaking pickpocket strap. But
cool.
Yeah.
What really, like, is it a Les Paul you were kind of always after, or is it something that you didn't really know until you got it and you're like, oh, this is the guitar?
I didn't really know. I've always loved Firebirds.
Okay.
And there was a time I played a show and I needed a guitar and he let me play this and I just had like a mission to get this guitar from him. And I actually traded him a Firebird for it.
Oh, wow.
But yeah. And then supposedly, like a guitar tech for Fleetwood Mac.
Uh-huh.
This was his guitar, so it's just always been set up nice.
And yeah.
I like to believe that that's the truth.
Yeah. A little extra mojo there, whether the story's true or not.
It just freaking feels so good.
Is there anything else that you've done to it that made it more yours, or is it just the Vibramate Gretsch edition?
Yeah, I just got
the... Otherwise, it's pretty stock.
Yeah, got the Bigsby on there. I've got like this pick guard taped on there with duct tape and glue.
It's rock and roll.
Yep.
And is there a specific song you use this for? Or is this kind of just the main guy that hangs out all night?
Man, I play this for most of the set.
Okay.
I start out with a Firebird, and then when we get to the nitty gritty of like the real rocking, jamming tunes, I gotta have this guy.
Gotta have the dual humbuckers.
Yeah.
And I spoke to Steve earlier, and obviously Dan's, you know, the focal point of the band when it comes to guitars, but where do you see your sonic space, knowing that there's three of you guys blowing at one time?
You know,
it's
just
like Skinnered up here.
The Black Keys is like 100% feeling, and like more so than anyone else I've ever played with. It's like just all feeling. Like if I close my eyes or I'm not looking at Dan and Pat, then I kind of go off a bit. Like, it is all feeling, and I'm just really trying to accent what Dan is doing always. Like, you know, if he's like, you know, super high end or anything on a song, then I try to go low and just accent him as best as I can.
Okay.
And I feel like we're somewhat similar guitar players, so it's really natural.
There's a synergy there that you can't really almost explain. It's just like it just happens.
Yeah, and it's so fun playing with them and just watching them. It's like all feeling. It's super loose. Best gig ever.
Do you ever catch yourself in the moment, like, not almost surreally evaluating what's happening in terms of, like, you're just here and you're like, wow.
Oh, yeah.
I'm with my buddies and we're in an arena.
I was describing to someone that playing these shows is kind of like a gig simulation, like you're in an IMAX theater, because there's just so many people here, and it's just crazy. It's kind of like we get to enjoy this with Dan and Pat.
Yeah.
So it's just so fun.
It's cool.
So
that
awesome, man.
Keep it all within the family. You guys all being from Ohio.
Yeah.
Working together in all their projects. It's cool.
Yeah, dude.
But enough of the sentimental talk. We got to get back to the gear, which is also sentimental. So talk to me about what you got. Two more Gibsons here.
Yeah. Well, Gibson hooked me up with these guitars here.
Oh, wow.
And this is a new Firebird, but our tech Frankie relicked this for me, and it's like based on a 65 Firebird, I think, right? But yeah, it looks old.
Yeah.
And I love it like that.
It probably feels like an old friend.
Oh yeah, oh, I love this guitar. It looks cool.
Yeah.
You know, I've always loved Firebirds. It seems like Firebirds cut through so well. And like, I played in a three-piece for so long.
Yeah.
And my brother's bass tone is so fucking big.
Yeah, it's like
and
a
huge.
Mountain.
Yeah, like, it's just Firebirds are just the best for that. And yeah, they just cut through, man. I'm not much of a gear dude, you know. But I like the way this looks and it feels good.
Yeah.
And it cuts. I love Firebird pickups.
And what do you use this? Does this get out, brought out for certain points?
You know,
or is it backup?
I, you know, there's not like a super big difference from all my guitars, the way they sound and everything.
Uh-huh.
So I just try to make use of them all equally.
Okay.
So I start out with this baby.
Yeah.
And then I go to my Les Paul and then I play my gold top.
Well, let's talk to that gold top.
Yeah.
Let the audience see it.
The gold top, this is the guitar I've always wanted. Got this bad boy from Gibson. It still looks super slick and clean and new. I love it. Had to put a Bigsby on there. If I don't have a Bigsby, I'll strum and my hand will go out like this. I'm just so used
like
to having
like a
one.
Tremor.
Yeah.
like when someone gets a limb removed, it's like that phantom pain.
Yeah.
You get that phantom
vibrato. Yeah.
That's
but
badass.
Yeah, dude, it's just, these are, it's so heavy and it's so, I've always wanted a gold top.
I love that.
Thank you, Gibson.
Yeah, no joke. Is that you have three guitars, but they all are vocally different. You know, you got the humbuckers, the minis, and then you got the P90s.
Yeah.
So they all have a different, you know, vibe for sure.
Yeah, man.
Just being different instruments.
P90s are fucking rough, man. Like, as rock and roll as it gets for me. There's nothing sneaking past.
Yeah. They're honest.
Yeah.
Moving on, we got Super Reverb here. Is that something you've always been accustomed to, or is that just kind of for this gig?
Yeah, I'm really familiar with Super Reverbs. I played one for like 10 years with the Buffalo Killers.
Okay.
And this is like a newer one. And it's just, I don't know, I love Gibson guitars and Fender amps. And Fender amps are awesome because it just, when you crank it up, they sound so good.
Yeah, that's the sweet spot.
I get most of my sound from my amp. I just tinker with it till it's right and crank it up as loud as I'm allowed to crank it up.
Yeah, until you get the stink eye.
Yeah.
And then you got a few colors down here, but nothing too exploratory.
Too crazy.
Yeah.
I just recently got Dan gave me this brown acid pedal. And
oh,
it's
like a fuzz, right?
Yeah. And it just sounds really good. And it's what's even cooler is my buddy Alan Forbes did the art on that.
He does a lot of stuff for
that. And I didn't double check that, but I know that. He did that. There's no way anyone else did that.
He's a very distinct signature look.
Yeah, I got that. And then Dan Johnson threw this to me one day when I was squealing. The Gatekeeper. I'm still learning how to adjust that correctly. Stops the squealing.
Yeah, it's a great noise gate name, Gatekeeper, and then the Keymaster. If any of you fans are Ghostbusters out there.
And then I've got a Dispatchmaster. I mostly just use that for like a slapback. I really like to have, you know, try to sound like John Fogerty or something with a slapback.
It's
I like that sound.
Especially with the gold top too.
Oh yeah.
That's and the
oh,
Bigsby's. Yeah. Andy, I appreciate you, man.
Absolutely.
Thank you for taking the time
to
talk to us.
Thank you.
This is
so
Chris
cool.
Keys from your guitar.